We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
You're listening to Believe You Me with Michael the Count Bisbing.
You know my name yet?
And Anthony Lionheart Smith.
All right, on today's episode of the Believe You Me podcast, we are joined by probably, well, was one of the hottest free agents in the sport of mixed martial arts. I am, of course, talking about Michael Venom Page. He was signed with the UFC, not with the PFL. What's going on, Mike? How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you, bro?
I'm good, brother. I'm good. So you joined us on Tales from the Octagon. Thank you very much. Great man, to have you there. And when you were on there, I said, who are you fighting? Or sorry, who are you signing with? And it sounded like you were going full bore, PFL, sounded like the contract was done, sounded like Cedric Doumbé, I believe, was the opponent. What the hell happened?
I got to keep people guessing, man. I couldn't just give it everything on the table. You know what I mean? I had to keep everyone guessing. So it's a little bit tricky to keep people talking.
Yeah.
And then, to surprise everybody.
Yeah, I certainly did that. So you're making your debut on UFC 299, which is looking like one of the most stacked cards. But without going into too much private details, I don't expect anything too much. But what was the deciding factor in signing with the UFC? And I'm not trying to instigate anything negative about the PFL, the great organizations.
No, definitely. It's to be fair, it was difficult. Obviously, PFL are really pushing hard, and they look like they're onto something quite big. It looks very, very well structured, and so on and so forth. But for me, and I even had this conversation with them. I was like, in order to turn my head away from UFC, it would have to be a ridiculous offer. And, you know, we went back and forth and, you know, they wasn't able to kind of get to that place. But, I think it's good to have this kind of competition, especially for fighters. And I've always said that from when I, you know, was first kind of, you know, growing up in the MMA world. It's great for fighters to have this kind of competition and have another organization to be able to go to. So, you know, I wish them all the best. But yeah, the UFC is kind of been in my heart since joining MMA or the world of MMA. It's always, you know, seeing the likes of yourself and other great champions come up. It's always been something I kind of have seen myself at least at one point in my career doing.
Absolutely. And I know for a fact the UFC fans will be very happy to have you, because you know you've always been a remarkable talent, not kissing your ass. You know, I mean, the things you've achieved in the sport and what you've done in martial arts. Now, for those people that don't know, you have been a lifelong martial artist. You are what, a fifth Dan?
In
kickboxing, just a cheeky little fifth Dan.
I also Lao Gao Kung Fu, almost got it to the end. I was literally brown sash Lao Gao Kung Fu. And then obviously later on crossing over into the mixed martial arts world. But yeah, like martial arts has been my life since the age of three. It's a family thing. So yeah, it's definitely close to my heart.
Let me just ask you about Kung Fu, because I'm a little, I'll say, ignorant when it comes to Kung Fu. I've never studied it. I've never done anything. And, you know, I think given mixed martial arts and its effectiveness, what's the word I'm looking for? Efficacy. That was the word doing the round throughout the pandemic. The efficacy. efficacy. I've got it wrong again already. But anyway, Kung Fu. Right. And I'm not asking you to disrespect the martial art, but how instrumental is that in a real life combat situation?
For mixed martial arts, there's limited things, but at the same time, my foundation My style comes from there. So as much as it's limited, it did create what you see in MVP. We did a lot of like traditional katas. But at the same time, it's weird because we did Lao Ga Kung Fu as an art, but we did kickboxing competitions for the fight. So obviously it did lean into a lot of my strength training and stuff came from Lao Ga. My flexibility, my kicking ability all came from the Lao Ga Kung Fu. And then I was able to execute those moves in the kickboxing. And then the kickboxing kind of formed the style that you see in that I've now, you know, brought to the cage.
Yeah, yeah. I guess doing martial arts from an early age like that, it kind of formats the brain because I did Japanese jiu-jitsu since I was a little kid. And whilst, again, some of it's usable, you know, but a lot of it is also things, a lot of it you just wouldn't even attempt, you know what I mean?
Exactly,
but however, my brain was formatted so I could learn and pick things up very quickly. You've had an incredible career. You're known for your flashy knockouts. We talked about this at Tales from the Octagon. I mean, I'll never forget denting Cyborg Evangelista's head. I mean, you threw a flying knee, damaged his head. How excited are you now to, and you know, to be in the UFC, which is widely regarded as the premier organization? What are your goals here, Mike? What are you looking to achieve?
To be fair, I'm going to make as much noise as possible. I already know the MVP that everyone's seen in Bellator, if I do even a quarter of the stuff in the UFC, it just makes crazy noise. And I know there's more to my game. I'm looking to go for the belt. There's no point wasting time trying to grow. I want to get some exciting fights, go for the belt. I've already been, you know, had a few interviews and spoken about how the magnitude of, imagine me and Leon Edwards, you know, Leon Edwards hopefully still has the belt, and I think he will. He's an exceptional, you know, exceptional fighter. You know, I come in, create some big noise, get a few big knockouts under my belt, and then go for the belt. And imagine me and him in the UK trying to fill out a stadium somewhere. I think we can make that happen.
And that would be incredible. But of course, first, we've got to get through your debut opponent, who is Kevin Holland. And I think on paper, that's a tremendous matchup. Both tall, long strikers. He's an entertaining guy. How do you feel about Kevin Holland?
Mate, he's a great, like, again, a kind of fan of his work, from just obviously being a fan of the game, watching him, seeing his fight, seeing how he talks, and like you say, the entertainment side of Kevin Holland. He's a game fighter, so I know I'm in for a fight. It's exciting, and it puts me right at the top. It's a big statement piece as well to go in and win against somebody like Kevin Holland. It's a big statement, and it kind of sets me on the right track, so I'm massively excited.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's a perfect kind of launching pad for you, UFC 299. It's a ridiculously stacked fight card. Kevin Holland is a fan favorite. Everybody knows the guy. He's got a colorful personality. And I think stylistically, that matchup's going to allow you to be you. You know, I mean, he's got great jiu-jitsu. He's well-rounded. But he's not one of these, you know, hardcore wrestlers that's just going to be shooting double legs, pushing you up against the fence. He's going to allow you to operate. So that must excite you.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. It just fits my style. But at the same time, it's not one-sided. He's competent in that area as well. So, you know, and he's long, he's awkward, he throws some crazy stuff that are all dangerous. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's what I mean. It just adds to the excitement of being at the UFC.
And I saw this, there was a bit of an interview this week, or you're doing the rounds. You guarantee Kevin Holland will not try and do a gentleman's agreement that nobody shoots for a takedown, right?
I don't think he will. Like, it'd be funny, if you look at my history, a lot of people initially, they see my style. Good strikers, they'll see my style, and from the outside looking in, they're like, you know what, he can never do that, you know, the playing around and stuff with me. Then they get in the cage and they realize that I'm a lot faster than they would have expected. I'm a lot more tricky. I start playing around and it's like, you know what? Let me just be a wrestler. Let me just shoot for his legs. And I've turned some amazing strikers into wrestlers in my career. And I know that, like, I just see it time and time again. Even in the gym, there's guys that I've sparred in the gym that are renowned strikers. And I know they come in here thinking, you know, yeah, I'm definitely going to get him. And, you know, a minute in, they're already shooting.
Exactly. Well, I can't wait. I look forward to it. I'm going to play a little game of word association with you in the rankings here, if you don't mind. So you're coming in. Where's Kevin Holland here? Is he not in the rankings? He's got to be in the rankings. Where is he? I don't see his bloody name. But anyway, Ian Machado Gary. He's ranked number 10.
Yeah.
Well, how do we feel about Machado Gary?
Prospect.
Yep. He's doing big things. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
Amazing style. Spectacular.
That would have been one that I would have thought on paper as well. That must have been a front runner for the UFC, but I think he's got another matchup. Gilbert Burns.
Oh, just living legend. That's a legend. I've loved watching him for many years now, and still at the top of his game. So amazing.
And he's one of the nicest guys as well. He's just a class act from start.
I've only met him once, but he's even in that interaction, you can kind of see he's just very respectful.
Yeah, obviously. The next fight for the belt, I believe at 170, is going to be Bilal Muhammad, Leon Edwards. Yeah. I'll say I favour Leon in that one. We've seen that before. I think, other than yourself, Leon has the ability to go on and defend the belt many times. The one fly in that ointment, I believe, is Shavkat Rakhmonov. 17-0, 17 finishes. What do you think about Shavkat?
Tough guy, but I see holes. I see a few holes there that can be exploited. Obviously, you can say it from the outside, but I see a few holes that can be exploited, and that's another exciting fight.
Yeah, listen, you're always so humble, Mike. You know what I mean? You will not talk shit about anyone, and I love that about you, because when people watch you fight, you walk out and you've got so much swagger. You look like the cockiest bastard ever, but you back it up. But then when I first met you, I'm like, he's like the nicest guy. There's no controversy. You were probably like, what am I doing here at Tales from the Octagon, because the London show got a bit out of hand. But the trash talking side of things, Mike, you know what I mean? That's a very popular thing these days. What do you make of the current climate? A lot of people are saying a lot of nasty shit these days.
Yeah, personally, I don't like it. Obviously, that's like, I'm bound to my martial arts heritage and how I've been grown. Like, I bow in show respect coming into the gym, bow to my coaches, bow to leave the gym. I've just grown with that level of respect. And I don't mind the trash talking a little back and forth and, you know, it's a hyper fight, but I feel like there should be, back in the day, there was like a gentleman's agreement that it stays amongst me and you, because me and you get to settle it in the cage. I feel like Conor McGregor's wave of like just how he exploded onto the scene, his personality. And everybody is drawn to what's genuine. That is genuinely him. But then you got the people that come up after him that try to replicate what he's done in hope that they're going to get the same traction. And then it just gets ugly. And I think it's those guys coming through now that's trying a bit too hard, and they're not being honest with themselves. And it's getting a bit, it's getting out of hand, a bit too disrespectful. Like, there's certain things that I'm hearing, I'm like, if it's said to me, then I don't know if I meet you in the cage or I meet you in the car park. Like, and that's just honestly speaking.
See, there it is. There's the real MVP coming out. When the PR agents aren't around, when your manager's not there, it's like, this motherfucker said what? You know, you touch on something there, Mike, because you've got a traditional martial arts background, as did... Earlier in the day, you know, back when mixed martial arts first came around, we were all martial artists.
Exactly.
Now it's kind of changed because the sport's got so big, and now it's 30 years old. There's people that see it on TV and they want to, you know, they see it as a career path, as opposed to being a martial artist and then testing themselves and slowly grinding and thinking, I'll go to the UFC and go against the best in the world. What do you think about the current state of affairs in that regard? You know, because there is people now, you know, they start off with the UFC in mind. You know, do you think there's been kind of a shift in the mindset and the talent of people?
Yeah, there's definitely been a shift, but I'm hoping, and it feels like still a lot of the coaches are still around in terms of that they're still got a bit of the old school mentality. So as much as these guys are kind of joining with no background of martial arts, they are... and just learning mixed martial arts, they are learning from, for the most part, guys that do have a background and do have a, you know, traditional values and stuff. So I think it does change when it comes to the PR side of things. But I think just from what I see with a lot of the guys that I've worked with, trained with, and listening to who their coaches are, They're still there. So again, I think it's going to take a little bit longer before it is, you know, it's complete wipeout. It is just complete the new coaches and the new mixed martial arts.
Yeah, the new generation, the George St. Pierre's and people like that, the slowly but surely, you know, we're all getting too old. 36 years old now, though, Mike. You know, in a perfect world, what is your trajectory? How many fights do you think it will take? Because you have got a big name, you know, you've got an incredible record. You've done some incredible, you've had some massive moments inside a ring or a cage. For those people who don't know, you fought all over the world. You've done professional boxing, kickboxing to the cows come home. Only two losses in your storied career as well. What is the perfect path towards a title for you?
Perfect path, you know, the defeat Holland, make a big statement. And if good enough, you know, they may be, I might be right there, but for the dangling, waiting for the title, or I have one more just to prove myself. And then again, I'm back for the title. I'm in it for a good time, not a long time. So I'm looking to make noise and make steps very quickly.
Obviously, spending a lot of time in Bellator and other organizations, have you always kept up with the UFC? And are you a fan? Do you watch the fights? So, you know, you can talk about some of the fights and stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I kind of class myself as a casual fan because it's usually the big name, the big hype fights that kind of get hyped. And other the ones I kind of go back and watch, or for the big events, I'll sit down and watch them. But it's usually I get to the gym and all the guys are talking about, oh, this, that, oh, this person did this and that, and then I go back and watch the fights.
So I'm just looking at your record here. You made your debut in 2012. Mm-hmm. Tornado kick right off the bat, you know what I mean? Setting the stall out high. As you say, you're a bit of a casual, if you will. Well, if you're a casual fan, like a lot of people are, Sugar Sean O'Malley is main eventing your debut card, UFC 299 in Miami, Florida.
Yeah.
Sean O'Malley, Chito Vera, you got any thoughts on that matchup?
Yeah, to be fair, I think Sean O'Malley has just impressed me every step that he's gotten. He's kind of taken every step that he's gone forward, and every fight that he's gone forward, I've just been more and more impressed with him, his timing, his just precision, accuracy. He doesn't really waste too much, you know, his setups. You can tell he's a very intelligent fighter. And even when I've heard him fight, I think it was on like Joe Rogan's podcast. And you can tell he really studies the art, like he really pays attention. So, my money's all on O'Malley, definitely. Oh,
geez, going against my coach, Jason Perillo. That's our guy, Venom. My God. The Believe You Me podcast wouldn't be the Believe You Me podcast without one Mike Harrington. He's our producer, and Brian McKay in the background. I think Brian just got out of bed, so I'm not going to ask him to jump on the screen. But Harrington, are you there? Because you got to get to Miami. There he is. You got to get to Miami. And to get to Miami, you got to get on a plane. But I don't know if you know this. Getting on planes these days isn't the most, it's not the safest thing just lately in America. Harrington, the floor is yours.
So they found this crazy thing. An Alaska Airlines flight happened. It was going over the Pacific Northwest. There was a bolt that was wrong with the door, and it ended up coming off of the plane mid-flight.
I saw this. Yeah.
The door of the plane landed in someone's backyard in Portland, Oregon. Someone's phone got sucked out of the plane. Somebody found it on the ground, still working and open to the Alaska Airlines, like where to get your bag part. So shout out to the iPhone. But they found when they
made in China.
They looked at the entire Alaska Airlines fleet, and they found that 9 other planes were at risk of having this exact same thing happen to them. And in the wake of it now, the FAA is saying you shouldn't fly with babies or children on your lap because they're as much of a danger as that iPhone to be sucked out of the plane.
I mean, they said, I saw in the news this morning, they said, there were several babies on that flight, but they weren't close enough to the door. Had they been a bit closer, the babies would have been sucked off their lap. That's I mean, it's not funny. It's horrifying. What would you do if you're on a plane, Mike, and the door gets sucked off? It's a stupid question. Shit your pants.
This is where I'm hoping that my training and grappling training pays off, and I start holding as tight as I can to the seat.
Get that seatbelt on. Are you a nervous flyer, Mike?
Not even the slightest. Not the slightest. Yeah. I've been flying since I was too young, so I've never been fast.
Yeah, no, it's mental, the state of things these days. Even the doors are flying off. Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, crazy. No. And then last night I saw there was some air traffic controller having an argument with a pilot. I saw it on Twitter. And now, granted, you can't believe everything you see on Twitter, but this air traffic controller was arguing with the pilot who's been a pilot for 15 years. And this woman saying, no, you got to do this. And the pilot saying, no, that's wrong. And she says, no, I know it's correct because I've Googled it. To a pilot that's been flying 15 years, she's fucking Googling the rules, man. The world's going crazy.
That's crazy. The world is definitely going crazy, man. We're living in scary times right now.
Scary times, my brother. Back to the fight with Kevin Holland. What do you? How do you think this fight plays out?
Again, I think you know what. If he's such a tough guy. It's always definitely hard to decipher. But I just see me just dissecting him, landing a lot of precise, very powerful shots, which will make him want to kind of change his game plan. Instead of trying to stand there and strike with me, he may try a few other things. Once that fails, if he attempts to go for these things, he might run into a knee, he might run into a punch, he might run into an elbow, and if he still doesn't fall over, I just see him being a hot mess by the end of it when they raise my hand.
Oh, a hot mess by the end of it. Let's go. I love Kevin Holland, though, as well. So shout out Kevin Holland. He's a great guy. The grappling side of things, Mike. How do you think you'll fare? Because the UFC, a lot of wrestlers in there, a lot of Dagestanis, a lot of powerhouse, Division 1, All-Americans. You know, how is the takedown defense, Mike? And
it's just going to force me to out of my game. You know what I mean? I got a few bad habits, and it's due to the style, unfortunately. So if I was solely wrestling, I'm fine. If I'm solely doing grappling, I'm fine. Due to the style, how my stance is in play, it can play a little bit of it changes the kind of the way I have to do everything. But it just forces me to out of my game and kind of correct those mistakes and fix those things, and that's it. You know, people. First and foremost, find it hard to even get to me. You know, I've been in the cage many a times and they struggle to even get to my legs just because of the movement. But if they do, again, it forces me to out of my game.
Yeah, I think that's what people don't realize. I'm trying to think. There was a fight recently. Who was it? Oh, Colby. Colby versus Leon. And people were saying he's not shooting. And he wasn't shooting. Colby didn't do much. It wasn't the most incredible barn-buster fight. Yeah. But I think a lot of that was due to what Leon was doing, the way he was moving, the way he was switching stances.
Yeah.
And then also the doubt that goes into people's minds. Because as soon as you shoot, you can walk onto a knee, an elbow, whatever, and it's wasted energy. So I see you repping proudly London Shoot Fighters there. You've been with them since day one.
From the beginning, man. So I'm loving it.
No, London Shoot Fighters is one of the first ever gyms, and they're no strangers to prepping people like yourself to get ready for wrestlers. They know the game inside and out.
Yeah.
So UFC. I mean, does it feel like this was always destined to be?
A little bit. Still a bit surreal. You know, even seeing Dana mention my name, still a bit surreal, and then. I think as I'm gonna get closer and closer to the fight, I'm still gonna have that bit of like, oh shit, I'm in the UFC, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I've always raised up to the occasion, so I'm looking forward to it still.
So you've got Sean O'Malley beating Marlon Vera, Dustin Poirier, Benoit Saint-Denis, Gilbert Burns, Jack Della Maddalena, Kevin Holland, Michael Venom Page. I mean, it's going to be hard to stand out on this card because normally you would come in and deliver some crazy knockout and people would be talking about it. But this fight card is absolutely mental.
If I do what I think, I actually do believe though, because everybody else are existing UFC fighters. I think just the question mark over my name makes my fight very interesting. I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention just because they want to know. They want to know the answer. Can I hang in the UFC? Is he at that standard? So regardless of, I always say the same thing. I'll say it when I was in Bellator. I could be the first fight of the night. I still class myself as the main event because people want to see me and people are always entertained by me when I'm in the cage.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You did have two boxing matches. Is the boxing side of things that's done?
It's definitely done now.
Well, exactly.
UFC are not letting that happen. So it's definitely done now. But yeah, you know, I'm a martial artist. I love to kind of lean in and try and try different or just test myself in different ways. You know, I definitely would have done it more back then, but we had some political issues in the background. And then, you know, I tried the bare knuckle as well. To be fair, I actually had a lot of fun. I didn't get the result I wanted. I felt like I got the result. I got the result, but I didn't get the result I wanted. But I had fun. Like, I always like to push and challenge myself. But for now, the main challenge is the UFC now. Like, and can I get to the top?
Yeah, of course. You're talking about the fight with Mike Perry. I mean, yeah. Mike Perry, if there's one person on planet Earth that is suited to bare knuckle,
yeah,
it is that man. He's an absolute animal.
Definitely. He's found his place and it's nice because, yeah, I do like him. He's a great character, a cool guy. Is. So, yeah, he's found his place. It's kind of nice to see him, regardless not necessarily making the success that he wanted in the UFC. He's now fallen into this thing that is just perfect for him.
Yeah. Now another thing that stuck out to me when I did meet you finally in person was the size of you. 6'3", you're a big dude. Making 170 pounds, that's going to be a pain in the ass, Mike.
Yeah. To be fair, for some reason, I don't know what it is about. Everyone says it, even in the gym. From 1 week, I look massive. And then the second I know I got a fight, all of a sudden they're like, wait, how have you lost that much weight? My body just like, yep, we're ready to go. And it just, I've never found it too much of a struggle at all. So this is why I've kind of continued to stay in that. Obviously, they say as you get older, it gets harder. And I have felt that a little bit, but even still, I managed to make it.
You know, it's funny because I used to kind of experience the same thing, because when I knew I had a fight coming up, all of a sudden my appetite wasn't what it was and things like that. And I think that was my brain subconsciously just taking over everything in my body, because I knew I couldn't, you know, go out and be binging and eating crappy food.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I had to have a restricted amount of calories. So I just thought my brain was sending subliminal messages.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works, but, you know, as a martial artist, you could probably...
Mine is a powerful place, man. So yeah, I definitely believe in that. And I just let my body just, because I know it's happened before. I just let my body get to work. And I always, like, I've never missed weight. Never missed weight.
Yeah, yeah. So this time next year, Michael Venom Page, Leon Edwards, in a stadium in the UK. Do you know Leon? Do you have a personal relationship?
Yeah. You know, I definitely know him. And as I say, like, I don't feel similar to what we were talking about earlier. I don't feel like we need animosity to necessarily build a fight. We're both prize fighters. We both got, you know, an established name. If I go and do what I know I can do in the UFC cage, we're going to make some noise and people are going to be looking for this fight. We just need to, you know, just touch hands, rock it out, and then hug afterwards, regardless of the result. Let's go.
Yeah, I would love to see it. I would love to see it. Well, listen, Mike, no doubt you're getting ready. How is preparations coming along?
Tough, man. My coach is on my neck. He's all right. He's not messing around.
When do you fly out to Miami?
They're trying to finalize that now, whether they want me to go out a little bit earlier. But to be fair, because my family are there, I go back. I literally just came back from there. I never really have any kind of jet lag and stuff going to Miami. So I might not need to acclimatize. So maybe just be the week off.
Yeah, it's not bad. What is it, 5 hours, something like that? Well, listen, Mike, we'll let you get back to it. I'll let you get training. Fun, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for joining us
on Tales from the Octagon. Did you enjoy yourself? Oh, he's gone. He's gone. He's fucking out of it. Oh, there he is. I was like, he's not messing around. He's got a training session to get to. Hey, thanks for joining us in London, mate. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Man, listen, I always even the first time I came down, love listening to your story. It's very inspirational in terms of what you had to go through to kind of get to the title. And I feel like I think I said it to you, I feel like you found your place. You're so comfortable on stage, man. It's just, you got such a great presence, great energy, great character. It was a blessing to be there. Thank you for inviting me.
No, you're the man, Mike. All the best against Kevin Holland. Sadly, I won't be there, but I will be watching, Mike. Big fan, lot of respect, and thanks for your time.
Nice one, man. Take care, man.
Take it easy, brother. There he is. The one and only Michael Venom Page. We'll be right back after this break. All right, today's episode is sponsored by Chalk.com. That is Chok.com. And Chalk, they specialize in all natural supplements. And more importantly, their new natural testosterone booster, which is taking the sports nutrition world by storm. Men's testosterone levels are at an all-time low. Every single year, your testosterone levels dip. If you're listening to this, you're in your 30s, 40s, or 50s, you got to give that stuff a boost. You're going to feel better. You're going to feel like more of a man. You're going to lose weight. You're going to be in better shape. You're going to have more energy. You're going to be back to the old you. And that is where Chalk comes in, because their natural testosterone booster, number one, it really works, and it's not full of crap, okay? The supplement industry is filled with nonsense. Trashy supplements that don't really work. Well, Chalk uses full disclosure labeling, so you know exactly what is going into your body, and you know the exact ingredients measured to exact clinical research. Chalk Daily is the cleanest research-based testosterone booster available, and along with Chalk Daily, be sure to check out the Male Vitality Stack and the Stack Ultra. If you feel like you're dipping in life, if you're feeling like, you know, the libido isn't what it used to be, if you're not getting the results from your workouts and you just kind of feel drained and unfocused, your testosterone levels dropping is probably to blame. So give it a boost and do it the natural way, and do it with Chalk.com. Right now, go to Chalk.com. That is Chalk.com. Use the code Bisping at checkout for 35% off the entire order. Start the year off with a bang. Go to Chalk.com. Use the promo code Bisping and get 35% off your entire order. All right, shout out to MVP for joining us. Can't wait for that fight. What do you think, Harrington? Who wins that fight? I'm putting you on the spot.
When's the last time Kevin Holland came on this show? MVP was just here, so I got to go with Michael Venom Page.
That's it. You pick with who comes on the show, friends of the show. Kevin Holland has been on a couple of times, though. Oh.
He's been on plenty, but so is Michael Venom Page at this point. Like I said, when you're neck and neck as guests at this point, whoever did it last. So, Black Man, the ball is in your court. Anytime you want to come on the show, Kevin, try to win my vote.
Well, they're both black men, Harrington. So, I mean, you are okay. Coming out with some choice descriptions lately.
Right. You're the one who reminded me he's the superhero black man.
He is the superhero black man, and that's a fantastic fight. I can't wait for Michael Venom Page. But last night, Dana White took to Instagram announcing UFC 300. Another fight, Zhang Weili versus Yan Xiaonan. Thoughts on that one, Harrington?
My first thought was, oh, title fight for UFC 300. We're definitely getting Leon versus Bilal announcement, right? Nope. I don't know. I'm happy for this fight.
No, it's a tremendous fight. I mean, Zhang Weili is phenomenal. All Chinese affair, Chinese champion versus Chinese contender. I think it's a tremendous fight. I think it's going to bring a lot of eyeballs from the other side of the planet. I was a little surprised they didn't do that in China, though, because, I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, Zhang Weili's incredible. I love watching a fight. That fight with Yan JJ was unbelievable. I think Dana went through some of the stats last night when she fought Amanda Lemos. It was something like 280 strikes to 21. So the output's phenomenal. She's an amazing champion. And yeah, I mean, we're still yet to see what the main event is, though. So far, what have we got? UFC 300. Let's have a look. What have we got, Harrington? What's been announced?
Akar versus Aljamain Sterling. I know that one's on there. Rakic versus Jiří Procházka.
Yep.
Cody Brundage.
Bo Nickel. Brundage. Jiří Procházka and Rakic. Charles Oliveira, Armin Sarukian. Zhang Weili, Yan Xiaonan as the first title fight. So there's going to be another title fight. If you had to guess, what do you think? And I know we're pounding this story. We're beating it to death. But last time we said Jim Miller versus Brock Lesnar, we were having a laugh. I spoke to Jim Miller. Obviously, he's in action this weekend at the fighter meetings. And he brought it up. What's up, Brian?
That's the biggest news from last episode. I've seen it on literally everything. Anthony Smith says Jim Miller beats Brock Lesnar. It's wild.
Outlets, they love to run with the story. So you stay on, Brian. Like, I did a little thing on my YouTube channel the other day, and I said, like, maybe Brock Lesnar versus Tom Aspinall. And I was kind of joking when I said it. You know, I wasn't deadly serious that that was going to happen. Well, there's multiple stories now. The Daily Mail, as we know, we're going to trust them. They are a very respectable outlet. They're running with the story. Michael Bisping says it's Tom Aspinall versus Brock Lesnar. I'm like, shut the fuck up. It was a joke.
I mean, well, dude, that's a great fight, and I don't think anybody's not going to pay to see it. So, I mean, just roll with it, dude. Take the job as matchmaker.
People are making stretches because there's been no fights. You know, it's like they're really, really picking up for some news.
Now, Harrington, I will say this, and no offense, people are annoyed about the quiz that You know, you didn't give the answers to every question. People are like, I wanted to know the answer. You didn't give the all of the answers, Harrington.
Oh, I feel like I did, but here's the thing. I have it all in a Google Doc. I will, I'll release it from the BYM Twitter so you guys can look through it and quiz your friends. The only flack I got from that quiz was people saying it was far too hard, got to dumb it down for next year. Not for you guys, but for the people listening at home. They want to play along and get some answers right. So,
well, they're not competing for all this clout.
I kind of agree, though. They were hard questions. And you know what? Here's a question you could have asked, because we're talking about Tom Aspinall and John Jones, right? That's a big story. They're going back and forth on Twitter. We've talked about it a lot. Arlovski is fighting this weekend, right? And I'm commentating the fight. And how good is it to have fights back? My God. Oh, and by the way, Harrington, I saw your little thing about how to turn a bet into $50,000. By when was that?
By UFC 300.
Yeah, yeah. Job well done. If you're not following Mike Harrington, give him a follow. What is it? DM Harrington?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
And B. McKay is right. Give the guys a follow. So anyway, I'm commentating this weekend. So I was looking up Andre Arlovsky. And because of Tom Aspinall, people are like, well, when has an interim champion ever defended a belt? Andre Arlovsky was an interim champion and defended the interim belt, according to Wikipedia. I did not know that.
Wasn't Henan Barão's entire run an interim champion as well, if I'm not mistaken? Because Dominic Cruz was out. I think he defended the interim belt against TJ, and then eventually TJ got graduated, as I remember. But it's not that crazy to defend an interim belt. So I would, I wouldn't look past that at all.
Did you see that John Jones came out and basically said, listen, I've done everything I can. I don't need to prove myself. And he kind of alluded to retirement. If you can just pull up that tweet, Brian, if you get a chance. But what did you think of that, Harrington?
Well, I mean, I don't like somebody like John Jones, who I know is like a student of the fight game, right? Like he tweets almost as much as Conor McGregor during these UFC events. So for him to come out and say, I don't know who 50% of your resume is, when Andre Arlovsky's on that resume, get out of here, John Jones. Like you are selling wolf tickets with that one.
Now, hold on. Listen. Arlovsky's about 97 million years old, right? He's a legend. He's a future Hall of Famer. He's a former champion. He defended the undisputed champ as well. Oh, here's John Bones Jones. Yeah, I'm terrified. Wasn't that one. No matter who would have won that interim championship, the narrative would still be the same. The GOAT is getting older now and he's running from fights. 36-year-old lifelong champion, starting to contemplate retirement. What a chicken. Yeah, it wasn't that one, Brian, but all good. Never mind. What was I going to say? Yeah. Look, listen. I said, if John Jones doesn't fight Tom Aspinall, and he's got to get through Stipe first, granted. If he doesn't, the narrative will always be that he was avoiding him. And a lot of people have come out in the comment section of my YouTube channel and say, no, love you, Bisping, but disagree with you completely there. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it is odd, right? Because we both expected, right? And I think everybody kind of did heading into the MSG card that was planned, Stipe versus John Jones. I feel like we kind of expected to see at least one of them retire, if not both. So now, because someone's been injured and there is an interim champion and there is quote unquote someone to run from, like that person at the top of the mountain who has a belt who isn't Jones or Stipe, you know, that just puts the target right back on him when he might have made that decision 8-9 months ago that he wants Stipe to be his last fight ever.
Well, exactly. And I was going to say that. I was going to say playing devil's avocado. Just because someone decides to retire doesn't mean they're ducking somebody. I'm just saying that casuals, you know, would come to that kind of conclusion. But still, Jones is a legend. Harrington, big MMA story. What have we got? Throw something at us.
All right. Well, I mean, just want to give you some props because last episode, you know, when the announcement came out that Armin Sarukian was fighting Charles Oliveira, you said, uh-oh, that's setting off some sensors in my head. I think Islam is about to fight Justin Gaethje. Well, Islam Makhachev agrees. He says that, yeah, you can make Oliveira versus Sarukian the number one contender fight, but he wants to get active earlier. He said he's targeting Justin Gaethje for a June 8th fight. And then the winner of Sarukian versus Oliveira in November at MSG, followed up by another fight in February of 2025. So we can get a third one in before Ramadan next year.
You've got to respect that, to be honest. I mean, there is a guy that's a champion. All right, he defended against Volkanovski, but he's calling out the toughest fights. Justin Gaethje, no walk in the park for anybody. Everybody wants to see that. The winner of Armin Sarukian and Oliveira, again, incredible. He announced June 8th as the date. there's already a pay-per-view. That's International Fight Week, Connor versus Chandler. So it looks like, I mean, I don't know if he should have been saying that. I'm not breaking the news. Islam Makhachev broke the news. But two pay-per-views that month, I would love to see it. It keeps me busy. I love that.
Oh, man, that would be... Wait, so you're saying is the Connor fight, is that date, the June 8th date?
Well, I'm only saying... No, June 29th.
Oh, okay. So there is going to be... Okay, I got you. So two...
Yeah, June 29th. And I only... Well, I mean, Connor said that date. We haven't had an official announcement yet from the UFC. But I was looking for concerts to go to because I went to Depeche Mode with Beck recently and we had a brilliant time. So I was looking to see what else was around. And I looked at the T-Mobile website. And as I looked on there, it's penciled in TBD, International Fight Week, Connor versus Chandler. So, yeah, there you go.
That would be, honestly, I want to see those two on a card together.
Oh, like, yeah,
Just imagine Islam and Connor at the same press conference table, just bringing up all those, the old Dagestani rivalry. That gets my juices flowing.
No, it does. It does. We were talking to... MVP before about babies getting sucked out of airplanes. I mean, what a horrific, horrific thing to just imagine. Oh. You know, you imagine sitting on a plane, the door gets ripped off and your baby gets sucked out of your lap and out the door.
I'd like to not imagine that ever. I'm literally sweating just thinking about it. But I do think, I don't know, dude, like I just picture how tightly my wife holds on to the baby when we fly with her. Do you think it would suck it out of your arms?
Yes. Yes. Well, they're saying apparently that flight, it was only at 16,000 feet. If it was at 30,000 feet, then the pull, the suction would have been a lot more and people would have got sucked out of there as well. So it doesn't matter. If you're just holding a baby and a door gets ripped off, then all of a sudden you've got ridiculously powerful winds. I'm sorry, Harrington. Baby Aura is going for a ride.
Dude, this is making me so nervous. And when you texted this to me earlier, my first thought was they're doing this as a way to generate revenue so that I'm buy a ticket for my baby.
Like Brian right now. Brian, Conspiracy Corner time. Brian, this is what he texted me. He said, they're just doing it to sell, to insist that you have to buy a seat for your baby because now they're saying you're going to put babies in a car seat and strap them in.
Yeah, they explosively decompressed a plane to make that point. No, that sounds right, Harrington.
Yeah. So they're going to put the fear of God into all of their passengers, seem like an unworthy airline, just so they can sell a few more tickets.
Well, I mean, look, we know how quick these planes are being turned around constantly. We've completely done away with any kind of like expectations of customer service in the air in the pursuit of getting just $5 off of a plane ticket. So, you know, would it make sense for them to run a plane until it's at at the breaking point?
No.
Them to then make more money selling tickets?
Maybe. No, that's not what it is. I can't remember who said this, but the collapse of society will show in our airports first. That's really what's happening. It's because all this DEI bullshit where people are just hiring to fill quotas instead of skill. This is what you get. You get low quality shit. And when it comes to a life or death situation, when it relies on everybody being as high in aptitude as possible at the thing that they're doing, when you start hiring people just to fill quotas, you're going to fuck that up. So you get stuff like this, like bolts from doors not getting secured and shit falling off. This is it.
You're absolutely right. And Elon Musk has been quite vocal on Twitter, X, calling this stuff out. And rightly so. Listen, you know, equal opportunities is fantastic. And there is a place for that. But meritocracy has to come first. It really does. And I've just sent you a link, Brian, to what I was talking about with MVP. I saw this last night on Twitter, and this just blew my mind. It's a 15-year-old, a pilot with 15 years experience arguing with an air traffic controller. And she's like, yeah, I've Googled it. We've got to hear this conversation. I don't know what a short landing is. Rebecca's father, Graham, shout out to the G-man. He will. So I sent it to him to find out what this is. But no response yet.
I watched this morning.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Get it on screen and have a quick look.
This made me so angry.
For a short approach, if you're going to do a power off 180, that's my point. Well, okay. I will remember that from now on. No problem.
Yeah, when you ask for a short approach, I expect you to turn your base to beam the numbers.
This will be a full stop for 6-5 Charlie, and maybe we need to talk about that some more because you're the first controller in 15 years that's ever said that.
Well, I'm just, you know, I, if you ask for a short approach is when you turn your base to beam the numbers. If I know you're a student asking for a short approach, I know you're out there practicing and you probably will extend. But if you're doing something other than a short approach, don't ask for a short approach.
Well, I will definitely look up the definition of short approach because I've never seen where it says you turn base or beam the numbers because I don't see how you could possibly do that.
Well, I Googled it, actually. I Googled short approach and it said to turn your base a beam or before the numbers and you will land probably touchdown around midfield.
All right, we can leave that there. So the air traffic controllers are Googling what to do. Now, I don't know if this was a DEI thing. You know what I mean?
Has to
People
be.
People are assuming it is. But anytime an air traffic controller that is, I mean, that probably wasn't a commercial flight, but regardless, I mean, Googling the rules mid-flight, that doesn't sound like the best course of practice.
I think he had passengers. I think that was a commercial flight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think from what I remember, I thought he already had 77 people aboard. I could be making that up, but
yeah. It's a wild time.
Isn't that one of those weird jobs too, where they have like a forced retirement age?
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's like you can't be more than like 55 and be an air traffic controller or something like that. So.
It's not that, but there's a hard limit on hours worked and all that other stuff. Like it's a super regulated job.
Rightly so. I mean, we're talking about people. We're talking about babies getting sucked out of goddamn aeroplanes. I mean, I don't know what a short landing is, so we'll leave that one there. But if you're getting on a plane, make sure you put your seatbelt on. Have you seen that Key and Peele skit? Have you seen that one?
Where they're on a plane and
one of them saying, wear your seatbelt. And he says, I just need the bathroom. And he's saying, wear your seatbelt. He said, I just need the bathroom. And then he insists on getting out of his seat and then gets sucked to the top of the plane and stuff. Have you seen that?
Yes.
And that is goddamn hilarious. Key and Peele, they are funny. All right, this episode is sponsored by Prize Picks, and Prize Picks is the largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform in North America, and they are the easiest and most exciting way to play DFS, daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you just pick more or less. Like, for example, this weekend, it is Johnny Walker versus Magomed Ankalaev. In that fight, will Magomed Ankalaev score over or under 1.5 takedowns? Will he land over or under 1.5 takedowns? I'm going to say over. It's 5 rounds. There's my pick, but don't come at me. Also, the co-main event, Manel Kopp. Will he score or land over or under 65 significant strikes? See, there you go. It really is that easy. You can turn $10 into $250 with just a few simple taps. Prize Picks offers weekly promotions also that can lead to big payouts like Taco Tuesday. Prize Picks discounts select player projections of up to 25% to provide even more value. And Prize Picks now offers Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account this year. So what more are you waiting for? All you got to do is go to prizepicks.com/believe. Over or under 1.5 takedowns for Magomed Ankalaev, over or under 65 strikes for Manel Kopp. I mean, it couldn't be that easy, right? It couldn't be easier, in fact. I could read this a bit easier. Sorry about that. Go to prizepicks.com/believe. Use the code believe for a deposit match of up to $100. One more time, prizepicks.com/believe. Code is believe for a deposit match of up to $100. All right, Hamilton, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that your background seems to have miraculously somehow changed.
Yeah, we figured out the miracle of teleportation here, so we're rocking and rolling with this show.
Yeah, I'll tell you what else is rocking and rolling. Mike Perry, as Michael Venom Page said, I mean, the man's incredible. What he's doing in Bare Knuckle is phenomenal, and there's a little video doing the rounds of him trying to secure a fight with Nate Diaz.
Mike Perry, Nate Diaz should be on UFC 300. He said there's no one to fight. Like, hi.
You trying to go make 75 grand, Mike?
I got Mick Maynard's number. I'm going to call his ass and be like, put me and Nate on 300.
Dude, do it.
Call him right now and tell him you want Nate on 300.
It's not Mick Maynard. It's Hunter Campbell.
What's up, you lunatic?
Nate Diaz says there's no one to fight on UFC 300. I'm saying me and Nate, y'all can bring me back for the little purse, but then throw in the PPV points, and then we can have a great show for UFC 300.
I got a better idea.
Oh, I've got a better idea. Why don't you stop calling me mid podcast whilst filming me and recording me to do a fight negotiation? And by the way, why does Mike Perry look like, I don't know, a poor man's, who is it? What's that film? I was going to say Juice Bigelow, Male Gigolo. It's not that. No,
Leaving Las Vegas.
Oh. No, Boogie Nights. He looks like the character from Boogie Nights or something. Mike Perry, the porn star. Mike Perry, Nate Diaz, call me stupid. But I kind of like that fight.
Yeah, why wouldn't you? I mean, it's a fun dynamic fight. It's a guy who, you know, two guys who have names outside of a belt, right? Like that. If you're talking about like a BMF division, which you would consider, you know, Nate Diaz like a front runner to fight for that first belt, Mike Perry certainly cut from that same cloth.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, I mean, as again, what Mike Perry's done is incredible, right? And I think he's gathered a lot of fans, you know what I mean? The people that he's beaten, Michael Venom Page being one in a close fight, Luke Rockhold another. Who else did he? Oh, Eddie Alvarez. Just recently. That was a goddamn war as well. Yeah, I like Mike Perry. He's a wild man, but he's a great guy. I'd like to see him back in the UFC, even if it is just one fight, two fights, whatever, against Nate Diaz. But Nate Diaz, though, came out this week. He's going to be boxing Jorge Masvidal, by all accounts.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Somebody was saying there was a early March date on the calendar for it. So, yeah, Jake Paul, I know, came out and poo-pooed it. He's like, oh, yeah, big news. Nate's going to box Jorge. It's like, well, no, kind of, though.
Well, Jake Paul's calling out Nate Diaz constantly for a mixed martial arts fight. Do you know what I mean? So, I'll tell you what. Nate Diaz, Jorge Masvidal rematch in the UFC. I'd rather see that than a boxing fight. No disrespect to Nate Diaz. He didn't look all that in that boxing fight against Jake Paul. Kind of let himself down in that one. Mixed martial arts, though, that is his forte. That's what he's best at. And a rematch with Jorge Masvidal, who's now coming back. I'd rather see that than Ben Askren, if I'm honest.
Right. So like that was Hunter's actual response, because I went and watched more of that clip. He said, you know, you should convince Nate to come fight you in BKFC. And Perry's response was, no, Nate doesn't want to do that. He wants to use his jiu-jitsu again. So it's like, I couldn't imagine, you know, like I couldn't imagine anything like it making sense to eliminate that ground game from your next fight with anyone.
So hold on, you've seen the whole thing. Yeah. So Hunter Campbell suggested that he fights Nate Diaz in bare knuckle.
Yeah, and he said that he's offered it to Nate, and Nate is not interested in doing bare knuckle.
So basically, Hunter wasn't interested whatsoever.
Well, Hunter did have some follow-up questions. He's like, what else does your deal have? Like, and Perry said he can go do anything. Campbell did like clarify, he's like, so anything else bare knuckle related would have to be through them. And Perry was like, yeah, I think that's the case. But you know, he said, I'm leaving the door open.
Okay. Well, you never know. Mike Perry could make a return, and I, for one, would like to see it. Nate Diaz failing. Masvidal, failing, Mike Perry. Who else you think?
I mean,
well, it seems like he's itching big time to get back into UFC.
Right. Like we were supposed to get that Nate versus Poirier fight at one point. That made a ton of sense to me, but he's now matched up against Saint Denis. Yeah. So it's like the only guy is Justin Gaethje, but you got the champ calling him out. So I think that takes precedence over a Nate Diaz call out any day of the week.
100% without question. So anyway, it's a lot of if, buts, maybes. It's just Mike Perry having a laugh, being silly, calling Hunter Campbell, and probably wasting the time of a very busy man. So
and should we talk probably about committing a crime in the process? You can't call someone and be like, hey, and just put an interview out with them and not tell them they're being recorded.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Hunter's going to give a shit. So what definitely is happening, though, is that the UFC is finally back after, what, a four-week hiatus. Feels good. I'll be leaving. I'll be packing shortly to go to the airport, flying into Vegas, commentate these fights. Main event, Johnny Walker. Magomed Ankalaev, it seems we should have went through this on Monday with Anthony, because if anybody knows these two and who, you know, would have some insight, nobody knows better than Anthony Smith. Of course, fell short to both of them, but Anthony will be back, no doubt about that. But I spoke to both of these guys this week. If you recall, just a quick refresh, the fight ended very quickly, 3 minutes, 13 seconds, illegal knee. To a downed opponent, Magomed Ankalaev, kneed him in the face. He said, "Where are you?" The doctor did. He said, "I'm in the desert." They called the fight off. So obviously we have fighter meetings, and I spoke to Johnny Walker about it. And he said on the night when he got kneed in the face, being a fighter, of course, he wanted to continue. And he was actually initially annoyed with the doctor's decision. But then he went on to say that after the fight, his neck, his jaw, his collarbone, everything kind of just like clammed up. And he was in a lot of pain. The best thing for him was that the fight didn't continue, even though at the time he did want to. In hindsight, he agrees with the doctor's decision. Now, when you look at that fight, one of the key takeaways for me is that Magomed Ankalaev did push him up against the fence, did kind of initiate a takedown, did have Johnny Walker on one knee. Of course, that's when he kneed him in the face. But he couldn't complete that takedown, right? Johnny Walker came to the UFC ridiculously explosive, unpredictable, you know what I mean? And that's kind of why he was so successful. Even hurting himself in his post-fight celebrations, the man is a wild, wild, wild man, that's for sure. But he has been improving. He's been with John Kavanagh now over in Ireland for about 4 or 5 years. He's married an Irish woman. His English is perfect. You can have a full-blown, normal speed conversation with Johnny Walker. His English is absolutely bang on. And with John Kavanagh and the other coaches that he mentioned, you know, the kind of forming the base of fundamentals, because I think in the past he was doing it of course, some training, but sheer athleticism, you know what I mean, to be honest. And now he's kind of learning the fundamentals. Got to be careful that you don't take away the wildness that made it successful in the first place. But he was doing a good job of stopping that takedown. Magomed Ankalaev couldn't force him to his back. And I think now coming into this one, that's going to allow Johnny Walker to be in kind of a positive place, you know, because when you're fighting a Magomed Ankalaev or anyone from Dagestan for that matter, you know, you're fearing the wrestling, you're fearing the takedown. So therefore it causes you to clam up and not have the output that you typically would with your striking. Well, I think we might see Johnny Walker go out there and be a little more reckless, a little more free with the striking, with the kicks, with the output. And we could see a very, very exciting fight.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very, very hard man to keep down, especially with that frame, right? He's just so lanky. It's hard to lock down, you know, those limbs. He's just so big for the division. So I do see it. Like, that was my read going into the first fight, was like, even if Ankalaev can get him down early on, I don't know that he can keep him there and work his kind of game plan where he does like to smother guys. He likes to break their will, sap their energy. Johnny Walker does not seem like that kind of guy. Like, he is just going to keep getting up and coming at you, throwing absolute bombs, until he cracks your chin. So I don't know. I do like his chances of going into this rematch.
Well, I think when you break it down, when you look at both guys, of course, the wrestling side of things and probably grappling in general, including jiu-jitsu, you got to go with Ankalaev. I think on the feet, the more dangerous guy is Johnny Walker. Magomed probably has fundamentals, the basics, you know, the cleaner striker locked in, but speed, power, and unpredictableness, if that's even a word. Yeah, I go with Johnny Walker for that one. So I can't predict this one because I'm calling the fight, but I think both men have a path to success. How do you see this one?
Yeah, I mean, I was on Walker the first time out. I don't see any reason to change my prediction there. But I mean, you know, that first fight was a little bit iffy, right? Ankalaev was able to impose his will just a little bit, but you know, I don't know. I want to see what Walker looks like towards the tail end of that third round, because I think his gas tank issues that were a thing early on in his career have kind of been mitigated a bit, and he's still bringing heat on his punches in the third round. I've seen Ankalaev wilt at the very tail end of third rounds as well.
And you got to remember, Johnny Walker's got an 82-inch reach compared to Magomed's 75-inch, so that's a big advantage there. He's the taller guy at 6'5 versus 6'3. I went through some of the skill stuff a second ago. I think Ankalaev, You know, if you can put him on his back foot, that'll be a key to success for Johnny Walker. Somebody like Ankalaev or any kind of wrestler, you've got to force them backwards. And I think if Johnny Walker is confident, like he said he is, he's very strong, he's very explosive, and he feels confident in stopping the takedowns. If he can walk him down, if he can put Magomed Ankalaev on the back foot, it becomes much, much harder to shoot a takedown, to initiate a grappling sequence if you're getting beaten up, if you're getting forced backwards. So I think that's going to be the key. And probably for both men, who can force the other guy backwards? You know, for Magomed, that obviously pushes Johnny up against the fence and initiate takedowns like that. And as I said, for Johnny Walker, if he puts him on the back foot, it makes him hard to even start grappling in the first place. So what is your pick? Sounds like you're going Johnny Walker.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna take Johnny Walker. I don't understand why the odds are as wide as they are when I've seen Johnny Walker take on wrestlers before, and you know, he's had as much success as anybody else. So, you know, I'm gonna go with the haymaker, you know, just a big shot Johnny Walker to get this one done.
I would love to know Anthony's pick on this one. That would be very, very interesting. We should text him or something, but that would take too long on a live show. Just shoot him a text, Brian, if you can, while we're on it. I'll do it right now, Hamilton Wilder Phil. Yeah, good fight. You know, a lot of people are picking Magomed Ankalaev, and a lot of people have him as the champion. Both of these guys feel that a win here puts them either next in line or one fight away from a title fight with the light heavyweight division. Alex Pereira, he's probably going to fight Jamal Hill next, right? So I would assume the winner of this is in a very good position to challenge the winner. What do you think?
I mean, it depends, because it's like, you know, the Jamal Hill thing is, you know, I as far as an Achilles goes, to me, that's a 1 year injury, you know, bare minimum. So that means he wouldn't be ready to come back until, you know, July of this year. That feels like a long time for Alex Pereira to be on the shelf, given how active he's been. So you could be looking at a number one contender fight in either this.
Hold on. Remember, when we did the podcast in November, Jamal Hill was training then.
Right.
And Jamal Hill had lost weight. So I don't know. Summer, May, something like that. There's nothing booked pay-per-view wise as May. We know April's UFC 300 and maybe even Islam, according to what he says, but there's nothing lined up for May. That's another 5 months from now. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I think Jamal would be ready for then if Pereira wants to wait. But outside of that, so you got Magomed Ankalaev, you've got Yuri Prohaska at one, of course. Yuri's just lost. Jan Blachowicz, is he going to fight lined up?
Yeah, he is fighting. No, he was supposed to fight Rakic, but then he got hurt. So no, he doesn't have a fight lined up. He's injured.
Yeah, well, they ain't going to do that. They ain't going to do that anytime soon. No offense, because the first one was a bit of a, it wasn't the best fight. Johnny Walker's there at 7, Nikita Krylov. Yeah, the winner of Jamal Hill and Alex Pereira, or as you say, you never know, depending on Jamal's return. Maybe the winner of this gets a title fight.
Right, especially because Yuri versus Rakic is the only other one, but that's all the way at UFC 300, you know? So it's like, this is the only fight between two top contenders in this window.
Yeah, interesting. So co-main event, Manel Karp taking on Mateusz Nicolau. That's a rematch. Manel Karp lost the first one in a very, very close fight. Could have gone either way. Since then, though, Manel Karp has looked fantastic. Last time out, took on a short notice. What was it? Felipe dos Santos. I'm just looking at you. Felipe dos Santos, David Dvorak, Yargas Zhumagulov, Ode Osborne. Two stoppages, two decisions. And then that's when he lost to Mateusz Nicolau and his UFC debut, Alejandro Pantoja. Now, Manel says that those two losses initially were because he was still transitioning from fighting in a ring out in Japan to fighting in a cage in the UFC. And there probably is some validity to that. It does change things up, certainly when it comes to wrestling and defending takedowns and getting back to your feet. However, I think it's probably more than likely you just fought Alejandro Pantoja, man. Pantoja's brilliant. Nicolau's a very, very good fighter as well. Did you know, though? I didn't know this until I spoke to Manel yesterday. In that first fight, Manel Karp detached the retina of Mateusz Nicolau in the second round. First round, a lot of people probably don't remember it. Obviously, I've watched it again. Wasn't much output from Manel. Mateusz Nicolau won the first round. Second round, Manel went out there way busier, landed some big shots, hit him with a brutal uppercut. And then Nicolau said to me yesterday he had a detached retina, had surgery to repair that. And in the third round, he was blind. So I said, well, obviously, I know a thing or two about detached retinas. I said, are you not nervous going into this fight with the guy that detached your retina last time? And his answer was, no, I'm not. If anything, that makes me more confident, because I know in the third round, I was pretty much blind in that one eye and I was still able to win the fight. I don't think when you detach your retina, these symptoms are immediate. Well, it might be sometimes, but with mine, it wasn't. For me, I didn't know for months later. So I'm not trying to take away from anything Nicolau says. I mean, I'm sure he knows what happened in the third round better than I do. But how do you see that one going, Harrington?
I mean, I had, you know, I did a little video on this yesterday, as you talked about earlier in the show. And like, I went back and watched the first fight, and I, on the night, had it scored for Kopp. Watching it on the rewatch, I had it scored for Kopp. So to me, he's already gotten it done the first time out. He needs the judges to agree with him. He has so much power. And I did look at that idea of transitioning from, you know, the other organization. He was fighting at 135. So that the Pantoja fight and the Nicolau fight were his first two fights at 125 in quite some time. You know, I think he's figured out a way for his power to translate now at this lower weight class. And that's going to be a real problem for Nicolau, because he saw it at the very beginning. Now he's going to see the finished product.
So I mentioned it earlier. You did an Instagram video where you turned, how much was it into how much?
So the goal is to turn $50 into $50,000.
By International Fight Week?
By UFC 300 is the idea.
All right. So by UFC 300, you turn $50 into $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick, condense it, make it fast, explain to the believers how they can take $50 and turn it into $50,000, because we're talking about this. I'm sure they want to hear it.
I'll give you $100.
Yeah?
Yeah, just give me majority of the profit, sure.
So basically, all you have to do, Harrington, is get every single pick correct on every single fight card. How many fights per event?
So the idea is you just need to get to plus 100, right? So you can take, generally speaking, the two or three biggest favorites on the card, put them together, and you're over plus. As long as you're above even money, you just double it every event for 10 events. $50 becomes over 50,000.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So in this fight card here, you've got Johnny Walker, right? And you've got Manel Kopp.
I've got Jim Miller and Manel Kopp.
Oh, Jim Miller and Manel Kopp. Jim Miller coming back against Gabriel Benitez, not Brock Lesnar. a lot of people...
Even though that's a 50-50 fight.
Did you see
I don't know. Anthony's out of his mind for that one. I love Jim Miller. I don't think that's a 50-50 fight. Sorry, Brian.
We got so much coverage because Anthony said that. It's crazy. I just keep seeing clips of people being like, I don't know what he's talking about.
Did you see Jim Miller addressed it at the I know he spoke to you personally about it, but he addressed it at the press conference. He said, I could get a Kimura.
Yeah, no, he did. I don't know if he could. I mean, he could get in a position to get a Kimura. Brock Lesnar would just pick up Jim Miller with one and smash him into the canvas like a Hulk smash. Hold on, here we go. Good job, Brian.
I'm going to start a petition. And I don't know if he's going to do it.
Oh,
but
sorry, this is a different clip, I think.
It is.
This is the Bruce Buffer. Bruce to introduce me as Jim Miller at UFC 300.
Bruce Buffer will not do that. Bruce Buffer will not. Bruce Buffer is too much of a gentleman, and he values his brand and reputation. I mean, listen, Bruce Buffer, of course, he swears here and there, but I don't think he'd do it. That would be awesome, though. Jim fucking Miller!
I got a compromise, maybe like a freaking
Jim Miller taking on Mario Batista and opening up the main card. Phil Hawes versus Bruno Ferreira. Also Jim Miller fighting Gabriel Benitez, pardon me, and Ricky Simon and Mario Batista. That's a good one to watch as well. Mario Batista's on quite a roll right now. He is very, very good to watch. What is it? 5 wins in a row. Damon Blackshear, Guido Canetti, Benito Lopez, Brian Kelleher, and Jay Perrin. 5 decent names. 3 finishes out of that 5, taking on, as I say, Ricky Simon, who dropped his first ever main event against Song Yadong in his last fight. Phil Hawes versus Bruno Ferreira. That'll be a fun one as well. And of course, the prelim headliner, the man that's been going for a million years, Andre Arlovski, going up against Waldo Cortez Acosta. Now, you won't know probably the name unless you're a hardcore, Waldo Cortez Acosta. If you watch the Contender series, you will do. If you really, really follow the sport, you'll know the guy. He comes from, where is it? Caribbean Island. Right about, no, he doesn't talk like this, though. He does not talk like this, you know, but he comes from a Caribbean island. Anyway, he used to play baseball, and he has a very fast hand, okay? He throws a fastball at about 100 miles an hour or something.
Is it the DR?
Dominican Republic.
There we go.
There you go. Thank you very much. He's got a can of red strap in one hand and a baseball in the other. And he was a very good baseball player. However, he was thrown off the team because guess what? What did he do? He got into fights. No shit, Sherlock. So now he's in the UFC doing pretty good. I forget his record off the top of my head, but so far so good. He has some fast hands, obviously, with the baseball background. So that's what Arlovsky's got to be careful of here. So Arlovsky made his UFC debut in the year 2000. He's been around forever. I mean, we all know the story. 44 years old. I have so much respect for somebody like Andrei Arlovsky. A man that's been around the sport for so long, the longevity of his career. I mean, I was just trying to look at his record there, but there's so much bump on his Wikipedia page. It's taken a million years to get there. Right, 34 wins, 23 losses, 17 knockouts, 3 submissions. Has been knocked out 12 times. Last time against Dontell Mays, he got knocked out there. Submitted by Marcos Rogério de Lima. Then he was on a 4-fight win streak. You go all the way back to the year 2000. The year 2000 is when he made his UFC debut. 23 years later, still going strong. Unbelievable. Second fight in the UFC for Rico Rodriguez. Then Pedro Hizo, Ian Freeman, Vladimir Matyushenko, Tim Sylvia, Wesley Carrera, Justin Eilers, Paul Buontello. Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah.
Tim Sylvia twice on the trot. I was there for one of them. UFC 59, Anaheim, California, 2006. I'd just come off The Ultimate Fighter and they flew the entire cast out to watch that fight. And do you know who I met? What's he called? Oh, man, I feel bad. He's the actor. He plays the big guy in Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, Michael Clark Duncan.
Michael Clark Duncan, there you go. Yeah, he came over and wanted to meet us all. Dana brought him over. I was like a little kid. I'm like, oh my God, I know you. You know, so I remember that event well. But anyway,
is that when you fell in love with Anaheim? You were like, this is it. I got to live here.
That is not when I fell in love with Anaheim at all. And I live in Anaheim Hills.
Maybe. Oh, I'm sorry.
You know, we're very fancy. Fedor Emelianenko, Roy Nelson, Bigfoot Silva. I mean, this guy's had a legendary career. But the question is, how long can he go on for? I wish him nothing but the best this weekend. And yeah, there's a little roundup. Some fun ones on the undercard as well. Fareed Basharat, Taylor Lapillus out of France. Matthew Semmelsberger, Preston Parsons. And yeah, there we go. Today's episode is sponsored by 8 Sleep, the high-tech solution to your age-old sleeping issues. 8 Sleep pod cover slips right over your mattress, bringing heating and cooling technology that keeps you comfortable and sleeping deeper for a better, more restful night. Listen, in our house, you always hear me going about how hot it is in here. Well, it's the same when I go to bed. The room is bloody boiling. If you're too hot at night, you won't sleep well, okay? So 8 Sleep will take care of that. But your wife on the other side of the bed, well, she wants it warmer. Well, guess what? All you got to do is put on the 8 Sleep mattress cover, and you can set either side of the mattress to be the exact temperature that you want. So no more tossing and turning, and no more falling out with the missus and arguing over the thermostat. Sleep science shows that in order to sleep your best, the body temperature needs to drop, as I said, in the middle to the early part of sleep and rise in the morning. The pod cover will improve your sleep by automatically adjusting your bed's temperature based on your individual needs. The cover can be added to any bed like a fitted sheet and allows you and your partner to cool or warm your side of the bed as low as 55 degrees and up to 110 degrees. If you want it 110 degrees, you're out of your mind, but that's the kind of range that this gives you. In addition to keeping you at the perfect temperature all night, the pod also tracks your sleep and health metrics. On average, pod users see their sleep quality improve by a massive 32% after just a month on the pod. So what more are you waiting for? If you're having sleep issues, this thing will take care of it and you will feel like a better version of yourself. You don't want to have a terrible night's sleep. You wake up the next day, you're not productive and all the rest of it. And trust me, this is the best thing on the market to get you the sleep that you require. There's no better way to improve your day-to-day life than better sleep. And the easiest way to do that is with 8 Sleep's Pod 3. Start the new year right and invest in the rest that you deserve with the 8 Sleep Pod cover. So right now, go to 8sleep.com/Bisping to get $200 off plus free shipping. So listen, great product, great offer. One more time, 8sleep.com/Bisping to get $200 off and free shipping. Fight of the night pick for you, Harrington.
What was the one I was going to... I mean, look, I like that Arlovsky is like, he's still very capable of turning back people, right? Like if you are not, if you don't belong in the top 15, you're not beating Andrei Arlovsky. I don't care how old he is. So, you know, that there is always a list for that, especially with somebody like Waldo Acosta-Cortez who hits as hard as he does. I could see Andrei Arlovsky taking down another 50 grand, but I'm going to pick Fareed Basharat. There's something about his fights. They're always entertaining. There's a ton of grappling in them. It's high level, fast pace. So yeah, that's my pick for fight of the night.
Yeah, the Basharat brothers, if you're not familiar, because they fly under the radar a little bit, Fareed Basharat and Javed Basharat, two brothers fighting, I think they're Afghan, but they fight out of London. They currently live in Las Vegas. Extremely technical, great boxing, incredible jiu-jitsu. Train with Jake Shields as well. So, yeah, that's a good fight, though. Taylor Lapalus was in the UFC, got cut for a bit, came back last year at UFC Paris, had a good performance there. My pick, fight of the night, and put your $1,000 on this. Mateusz Nicolau Manel Kopp, the flyweights, they're going to bring it. And the main event will be sick as well. Before we get to questions, Harrington, is there any breaking news or any topics or a good non-MMA story that you feel is worthy of my discussion? And I'll throw that to you as well, Brian. What's going on in Brian world?
Yeah.
You know Brian's got a wild story.
Yeah, Brian, give me some.
Oh, come on, Brian. I mean, we could talk about how... the thing in Miami could possibly be the government and Project Bluebeam.
I don't know what that is, and I don't think I want to get into it. But just real quick, what is Project Bluebeam?
It's the government's laser hologram program.
Oh, like that's what they accused of happening in Hawaii, right?
No, that's space lasers from people who live under New York City. What I'm talking about is it's like a projected, like realistic projected holograms from space. It's a deep rabbit hole to dive down. But
yeah, that's why I said real quick. And we won't go there. I tell you what, speaking of New York City though, Brian, seen a lot of unrest going on there. What's going on with all these tunnels that they found?
Yo, that is such...
Kids getting kicked out of school for the immigrants. There's such a lot crazy of story. Wild stories going on right now.
The people in the synagogue were trying to cement up the tunnel that they had underneath their building there. And then they got caught when they were... Because they were trying to fill it with cement.
Why did they have a tunnel dug in the first place?
That's a good question, Michael. That is a good question. And we are on way too public... of a channel for me to start speculating.
All right. No. I'm serious. That was not a loaded question. I literally have no idea. You look at Twitter. You know the For You section on Twitter is wild. It's insane. Like, because I didn't realize. I was like, what are all these crazy accounts and all this mad shit on my timeline? And then I realized I'm on the For You, not following. You go back to following now, though. It's so boring. You know what I mean? So, we just had a 3-mile run. You know what I mean? Whereas you go to For You,
that's the algorithm.
Murders.
Oh, my God.
There's craziness. There's wild stuff going on. It's insane. And, like, I've got to get off there. But sometimes if I'm bored and I want a little wild 5 minutes, have a look at that For You section on Twitter and it will blow your mind.
I just get on to look at the news sometimes and it's just like, murders and like horrific accidents and crashes. That's a majority of what my timeline is.
Yeah, we should play a game where we pull our phones out and just pull up our For You section. But we're not doing it because that
danger.
Gives an insight. That's danger. That is dangerous, baby. All right, if you have a question, please send it into bympod@gmail.com before you start, Harrington. Anthony Smith will be back on Monday. We're going to review Magomed Ankalaev and Johnny Walker 2. Going to go through all the big news, etc., etc. But yeah, send your questions in bympod@gmail.com.
And if you're listening on Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, make sure you subscribe to the show. Leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. It really helps out on all those platforms. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to the channel and you hit that notification bell to find out whenever a new video drops. And if you want to catch over 500 episodes you can't find anywhere else, completely ad-free and totally uncensored, head to gasdigital.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get a 7-day free trial. Check out over 20 great shows on the network.
Boom.
All right, so we got a question here from Milutan.
Milutan.
I think he's from Serbia.
My name is Milutin. I'm from Serbia, and I have a question for you. Before that, I want to thank Anthony for being open with all of us, with expressing his feelings, thoughts on the BYM. It's really an aspect of your show that, you know, we don't get only the fun part, but we also get the real life experiences and, you know, let's say hardships, right? The question is, what do you think would change in fights if the fighters don't know who they're fighting, basically? Like, let's say you get information, hey, you're fighting a wrestler or you're fighting a kickboxer. So you just know that your opponent will be a wrestler, but you don't know his special techniques, his special combos, or the, I don't know, whatever. And Harrington, I want to say something in my language that means I love you. Puši kurac, jebem ti materu pičku, jedna.
Tu.
Thank you.
Puši te patagruš.
Dude, there was a spit at the end.
The spit at the end really sold me.
Millerton, I love you too, brother. What, you don't love me? Jesus Christ. I'm very, very annoyed by this. Yeah, that was very open of Anthony. You know what I'm saying? And I think that, you know, that's what, as a fighter, you've got to be open like that. You don't have to, but I think it does serve you well to just be honest. You know what I'm saying? Because what else can you do? You can't lie. You can't bullshit. You can't put out a tough guy persona and say, look, listen, I was doing so great, or whatever it may be. It isn't going to change your thing. Everybody saw what happened. You just can't give up on yourself. You know, and I thank Anthony for being so open. And I think a lot of people do as well, because I think it is good for other people that are going through tough times to see somebody like Anthony, alpha males, you know, being vulnerable and showing that, hey, listen, life sucks. Life gets you down. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Life is hard, you know, and life is already hard, right? Just to sustain yourself and live and have a roof over your head and pay the bills and deal with drama in your day-to-day life. And then I don't want to be cliched about this, but, you know, people looking to be offended. Life's already hard enough. Why are you going to seek out extra shit to make your life hard? You know what I mean? So thank you, Millerton, whatever it was. I'll tell you what, I think he might be onto something here. Because how would it change fights if we didn't know the opponent? Well, you would have to prepare for every eventuality, which I guess in some ways would result in better fighters. So that's the short answer to that question. But what I like the sound of is, though, you pick 16 fighters, 8 fighters, you have a tournament, and you train, and only on the night they do the first round, and you don't know who it is. They pick the names out of a hat, and you have no idea until you're about to make your walk or whatever, or on the night they announce it. So you have the first round like that, and then you have the second round, and again, you don't know who you're fighting, because whoever makes it to the next round, they pull those names out of a hat as well. Hey, probably a little bit silly and definitely a bit gimmicky, but it would be fun.
Dude, I wanted that so bad for the middleweight division when it was like, you know, it was you and Weidman and Luke Rockhold and Robert Whittaker and like a bunch of guys where it's like you could make any one of these fights mix and match in the top 10 at that point were incredible fights. So it's like it was set up for that. Lightweight actually might be where that's at right now. So like I wouldn't hate the idea of like a tournament or a Grand Prix. But what jumped out to me with that question was, guys not sitting on the sideline, right? You never know which opponent is going to be for the title. You know what I mean? Like if you would, under that system, you wouldn't know if you had a title shot or not. You would just need to keep grinding. Don't say no to fights, because any one of these could have a belt attached to him.
Yeah, I mean, it would never happen in a big league promotion like the UFC. You know what I mean? Because it's too structured. The structure and there's professionalism there and there's rankings there. But just for like...
Also promotion...
For a bit of fun. It'd be good for a bit of fun. I'm not saying the UFC do that at all, but just as a fan to sit there and see the reactions on the faces, you know what I mean? You're a striker, you're like, shit, I'm going up against Magomed Ankalaev in a minute. what was I going to say then? Oh, you mentioned Chris Weidman. Mm-hmm. Chris Weidman, I saw he's coming back. He's fighting Bruno Silva. And he said that this could be his last ever fight. This could be the last one. He said his body's been beaten up so much over the past, God knows how many years it is. If he doesn't get the job done here, then this will be the last one. I think that was the quote. Was it anything to add? Because I see you looking it up.
No, I was just looking up Bruno Silva and what the date for the fight was, but I did see that pull quote earlier that he was going into it, you know, saying this very well could be his last fight.
And Bruno Silva is not an easy opponent. Bruno Silva, he doesn't have the recognition, if you will, or a high ranking. I don't even know if he's ranked, to be honest. But am I right in thinking that's Israel Adesanya or not? Alex Pereira. But up against Bruno Silva, they went to a decision. Bruno Silva is a very powerful striker, very explosive as well. The path to victory for Chris Weidman will be to use the wrestling and take him down. But that's a hard path. When you're Chris's age, he's got to be what? 40 by now? He's got to be almost 40.
Must be.
I'm 44 for crying out loud. You know what I mean? So he's got to be at least 40, something like that. What's it say?
39 turns 40 in June.
Yeah. So 39, a lot of wear and tear, but I wish him all the best. Right. What else have we got, Brian?
All right. So we got a question here from Joseph Bowling.
Hey, Michael and Anthony, it's Joe from Maryland. Quick question. Who do you think will break out in 2024? Title contender, superstar, win the belt, whatever. I got two names to watch out for. I'm going with Sean Brady and Jalen Turner. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. What's his name from Maryland?
Joe, I believe. Did I nail that, Brian?
Nailed it.
Nice.
Old Joe from Maryland. Well, Jalen Turner's already kind of broken out, Joe, because he's like, top 10, right?
He's
been around the top 10 for a while. He fought on the pay-per-view well over a year ago. He had a close fight with Mateusz Gamrot, right?
Yeah, but
the
other guy who he mentioned was Sean Brady, who's like in a similar position where, like, yes, they're ranked, they're doing well, but these are not guys who you consider directly in title contention. I think that was kind of his question. Who makes the leap this year?
Go on.
I was going to say, I think it's somebody that we were talking about on the trivia quiz is Diego Lopez. I think
you bastard. You took my pick. That's exactly what I was going to say. Diego Lopez. And in fact, this weekend, we have another guy to keep an eye out on the prelims. He's had two wins in the UFC. Where is he? Marcus McGee. I think he might have got like the best newcomer or something like that last year. He had two great wins. So keep an eye on that name. But Diego Lopez, there's a big breakthrough star. There's a guy, he's not in the rankings. He hasn't been itching and clawing and scratching his way to the top. Although Sean Brady, who did Sean Brady just beat? He just had a big win as well. Gastelum, yeah. Smoked him, right?
Oh, yeah. Pillar to post.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, shame that for Gastelum. But yeah, Sean Brady, yeah, no good one there. But yeah, I'm with Brian. Diego Lopez, this is going to be a big year.
I'm going to go lightweight class. Tatsuro Tiara. Tairi? I'm not sure. He's the Japanese dude.
Tatsuro Tiara.
There you go. Okay. Thank you, Michael Bisping. He's 15-0. Stunning knockout his last time out, and like he has the flash and the power that one, like the Manel Kopp style, what I was just talking about. I like him going forward.
Do you know what breakout some guy that's, I'm gonna say Israel Adesanya. Wow. This time next year. No, Justin Gaethje. Oh dear.
You think either of those guys have what it takes to be in the top 10, Mike?
Exactly. Do we have one more, Brian?
Sure. We got one here from Kevin from Texas. This is from during the break.
Good old Kev.
What's up, Believe You Me crew? Kevin from Texas here. Huge fan. Honestly, the month y'all were gone kind of sucked. That first episode back, I was fired up, ready to go back to my normal routine on Tuesday and Thursday. My question today, Sean O'Malley, Aliyah Taporia. They're going at it on LinkedIn, Twitter, X, whatever it is. My question, what are the chances we see that fight this year? Aliyah Taporia versus Sean O'Malley in 2024 out of 10. I think probably like a 6, but I really do hope it happens. Peace.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's funny because them two have been chatting a little bit on social media. You actually put it in the notes. First of all, Volkanovski's got his hands full. Sorry, Taporia's got his hands full with Volkanovski. And I think Volkanovski has his hands full with Taporia You know, I think that's going to be a really, really good, entertaining fight because Volkanovski, even though he did a pretty good job at negating the takedowns of Islam Makhachev, he's not really a wrestler per se. He's a striker first. Topuria is a striker first. He's undefeated. He can grapple. He can submit people like Bryce Mitchell. I think that's a really, really good fight. O'Malley, he's also got his hands full with Chito Vera. But you never know. You never know. Yeah, what do you think?
So, I mean, here is the he gave it a 6 out of 10. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10 based on this quote from O'Malley. If he goes out there and beats Volk and I go out there and beat Chito, that fight's happening next. That's just what's happening. So there's a lot of ifs there, right? Like he has to go out there and beat Chito, which I don't see happening. And Topuria has to go out there and beat Volkanovski in a fight that I'm picking Volkanovski in that fight. So I'm going to say like less than a 50-50 chance, but I would put it as high as 4 because if those two things do happen, for O'Malley to say it like that, I wouldn't disagree with him, right?
Well,
like,
O'Malley's a big star.
Right.
And whilst I probably favor Chito and maybe I'm a little biased because of that, you know, because of my association with him, every fight is different. I always say this, every fight is different. So just because Chito got it done the first time, that doesn't mean automatically that he gets it done a second time. I think it's a really good fight as well. But with O'Malley being a big star, if he can retain the belt, given the magnitude of his popularity, you never know. I think he would be a guy that could go up to 145 given the height of the guy, the length of the man, put on a little bit of muscle. But as you say, a lot of if, buts, and maybes. But I like it. I like to see these guys daring to be great. I like to see him calling out other champions, et cetera, et cetera. So there it is.
Also,
right?
It was 2 weeks, not a month. Come on. That we were gone.
Off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I appreciate it regardless. The fact that it felt like a month, I'll tell you what, it feels like I'm in a sauna. I asked Rebecca to turn the heating off. Before I came in here, the heat is not off. It doesn't need to be on in the first place. This is the hottest room in the house. It gets so fucking hot in here. That's not why I'm wrapping up the show. We're going to be back on Monday. We're going to give a full review. We're going to have some guests. And I hope you guys have a great weekend. Good to have the UFC back. Nice job. Big thank you to Michael Venom Page as well. Brian and Harrington, as always, much appreciated. And all you guys, if you haven't subscribed and rung the bell, do so right now. Enjoy your weekends and see you Monday.